Springfield Planning Commission. I'd like everyone to stand and pledge allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any adjustments to the regular session agenda?
No, sir.
Hearing none, well, any business from the audience? Hearing none. Tonight, we have a quasi-judicial public hearing regarding discretionary use on a moderate visibility cellular tower application, Land Service NW LLC, on behalf of Verizon Wireless LLC. We have the staff have an explanation on a quasi-judicial public process.
Thank you, Chair. I can give that explanation. Tonight's hearing is characterized as a de novo quasi-judicial hearing. That means that any issue, procedural, substantive can be raised that's relevant to the approval criteria. The approval criteria tonight are posted behind the planning commissioners for the public's view. Quasi-judicial means that you're entitled to certain due process procedural rights. That would be the right to notice, present evidence, have a written decision based upon standards, and to an impartial decision maker. The purpose of this hearing is to establish a record upon which a decision can be made. Evidence can be brought to this hearing. The evidentiary rules are less restrictive than in a court. However, someone must raise a procedural and substantive issue at this hearing, or you'd be prohibited from raising those issues subsequently on appeal. A person raising the issue must raise the issue or evidence sufficiently so that the Planning Commission has an opportunity to respond. If you're an applicant, you must raise concerns regarding any proposed conditions of approval to preserve your right to appeal those. The burden of proof in this quasi-judicial hearing is a preponderance of the evidence that all of the applicable approval criteria have been met. The record in this matter consists of the application, supporting information, staff reports, supporting documents, any testimony and documentary evidence that is admitted during the hearing. If someone would like an item entered into the record, present it to the planning secretary, either orally or in writing. If there's any question in your mind whether something is in the record, please make a point to ask whether it is. By statute, you have the right to request that the record be held open for 7 days. You must make that request before the hearing is closed. If new evidence is introduced, the record may be held open for an additional time for staff to respond. You also have the right to request a continuance of the hearing, but that is discretionary with the Planning Commission. Hearing is recorded on tape. If you're going to testify, please testify from the podium. Begin by stating your name and address for the record. If you'd like a copy of the decision, please let the Planning Secretary know. The procedure and criteria is applicant testimony, testimony by those in favor, neutral, and opposed, a staff summary, rebuttal by the applicant, and then close of the hearing. There'll be discussion of policy issues and compliance with plans and the decision. Also, perhaps a discussion about continuous procedures. The decision there'll be a written issued decision. Any person who's participated in the hearing may appeal it. Consult an attorney regarding the deadline for the appeal and the form. Oregon land use law requires that the Planning Commission disclose any ex parte contacts or conflicts of interest, and that a commissioner can be challenged for bias. A conflict of interest involves a situation where the decision maker or someone in their family would personally benefit or suffer because of their decision. An ex parte contact is a communication to the decision maker that includes substantive issues regarding the application that occurs outside of the public hearing. That's all for the procedures, and now you can open the hearing.
Thank you. I'd like to open the public hearing. Is there any commission members that would like to declare a potential conflict of interest or disclosure of ex parte contact? All right. Hearing none, we will go on to a staff report.
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the Planning Commission. The proposal this evening is for a 100-foot-high monopine cellular tower at 4992 Main Street. And for context, that's the back corner of the Square Deal Lumber site. So it's an existing commercial site. It's paved and it's zoned community commercial. And for context, I've provided the site location on the map here. I'll have to go kind of low tech because I don't think we have a remote for this thing. Just for a matter of context, planning commissioners will recall there was another Verizon wireless tower that came forward, was reviewed by the city council, and then returned to the planning commission for an adjustment to the location of that tower. The reasoning for that and other towers to follow, including this one, is the pending removal of cellular facilities at the International Paper site on their water tower. And I believe that's on the order of about 150 feet high, which provides pretty good coverage and capacity for mid-Springfield. With the removal of that, Verizon has indicated its intention to provide smaller scale, multiple facilities to address the capacity and coverage gaps that will exist in this area upon removal of that International Paper facility. So this is the second facility proposed in the in this general vicinity of International Paper. This one backs onto Riverbend Elementary School, as you can see on this air photo diagram. And with the zoning, it is within a site that is zoned community commercial. The school site is zoned public land and open space, and there is residential zoning in the vicinity, but does not directly abut this particular site. Staff advises that with the public notification that was done for this application, there was one comment received and it's included in your packet. A commercial property owner inquired as to the appearance of this facility. They have property on the south side of Main Street and have a kind of a view shed that extends across this site when they were advised that it was going to be an imitation fir tree. They were satisfied that it would not represent an undue visual imposition or eyesore, in I guess their words, in the neighborhood. So the staff included the email train there just to indicate that it appeared that they were satisfied with the answer from staff. There was no other telephone calls or public comments received. The applicant is here this evening to present additional information, more technical in nature, regarding the analyses that were done. They're included in your packet for the coverage and capacity gaps, the appearance. The site plan does meet the requirements of the city's development code for screening and for landscaping on the perimeter of the site. The applicant is proposing to use a natural gas-fired generator, which does not impose additional hazard onto the site. They've also indicated in their application materials that the exhaust from the generator that'll run periodically will be directed into the lumber site, so away from the school site, so as not to create a noise effect on the school site. There are conditions that staff is recommending associated with the site plan. They include the installation of stormwater management facilities, including catch basin water quality filters in the immediate vicinity of the tower location, signage on the fence to indicate wellhead protection measures that will be needed on the site, and observation of construction practices that recognize the sensitivity of groundwater in the nature in that area when they're doing drilling and construction of this facility. This essentially summarizes a staff report. I'd be happy to answer any questions, and I do note that the applicant is in attendance and does intend to also present information related to this application. Do you have a copy of the site plan showing where its location into the essentially in the corner of the property?
I had a couple of questions. One, since this is a private gated commercial property, is adequate access provided for like off power access by the fire department and/or utility companies as needed. Say, for instance, there was a gas leak when the lumberyard was closed, or there was a fire situation that the fire department needed access.
Sure. Sub-Electric has requested a key or provision for entry into their compound in the event of an emergency where electricity needs to be shut down on the site. The fire department did not specifically request entry into the site. I suspect that, as is the case with most lumber yards, a public works lock or an accessible lock has already been provided on the site. Usually they're detained onto the site to allow for emergency access, and that's likely something that already exists on the site.
Thank you. And now we have a testimony from the applicant.
I'll be your announcer.
Okay.
I'll queue it up.
Good evening. My name is Ed Fournier with Land Services Northwest LLC, the agent for the applicant, which is Verizon Wireless. My address is at P.O. Box 302, Bend, Oregon 97709. As was mentioned in the staff report, Verizon Wireless is proposing a new telecommunications facility. The main reason for this, as was mentioned, is the water tank facility called Springfield. So really the keystone wireless facility for the Verizon Wireless network is going to go away because International Paper no longer wants to maintain the water tank. It's not part of their business. Also, they don't want to have third parties with free reign on their location. This is actually the third location, two others with a power company that have come with similar things that have said, no offense, we just don't want third parties on our property anymore due to security issues. So this is not something that's extremely uncommon. The other issue being also with capacity. People used to carry a cell phone, now you carry a computer in your pocket. That number is actually conservative. It was 580, but I figured I'd just round it down to 500%, the amount of capacity issues that people are going to increase in the network. Cellular networks are fixed. I'll use the analogy of Starbucks. Once the line goes out the door, the only thing Starbucks can do is build another Starbucks store at the other end of town. And when the line goes out the door of that one, they put one in between. Same thing with the cellular site. You can only have a fixed amount of capacity, a fixed amount of users that are able to do that. That's the secondary issue. Again, the primary one for this location, a co-location site that's been approved, and also the location down to the south on Jasper, I believe it is, are needed to replace, and I'll provide some more information on that. There's a couple of maps and other items that are in this presentation. All of it is in the application materials that you have. I'm not presenting new information per se, sort of a summary of 20 some odd pages of narrative and probably another 20, 30 pages of other application materials as well. As I said, the intent with this is to be able to utilize multiple smaller impact facilities than rebuilding another 160-foot high structure to put antennas on. And as I said, the other locations as well. Next map. And I'm going to aim for that one just so I can point a little bit. I'm less likely to zap somebody with this. This isn't the most powerful in the world. It seems even going to show up. No, it won't.
So you usually don't on TVs.
On the TV.
Sorry.
I don't have a stick that long. If you look in the center, I'll try to visually do this. This isn't the way I usually practice, but that's all right. In the center of it is a blue dot, and above that it says Springfield. That's the location on the water tank at this time. You'll then see another location off to the left called Mohawk, and then one off to the right, Thurston, if I can squint from that far. That's the existing Verizon Wireless network as it actually operates today. Red, very good coverage and capacity. Orange, good. Yellow, mediocre. White, you probably can't hold a phone call. and Verizon Wireless strives for, if not red, orange. And again, that's especially with capacity issues as well. You can then see three other black dots between Mohawk and Springfield is a site called Astor. Again, that's a co-location on a existing tower at 693 63rd Street. Again, there's an existing permit for that. Also then down to the south, a site called Clearwire. That's the one on Jasper as well. That's going to be substantially similar to this facility. It'll be a faux monopine tower. Between the three of those, that's actually what is needed to replace this facility, partially again because the existing Springfield site is so high. Cellular signals are basically line of sight, so the shorter the tower, the smaller the footprint it has for coverage, just as a matter of physics. Next slide. The first thing that's always done by Verizon Wireless is to look for co-location opportunities. That means, is there an existing tower that can be used? Is there a water tank? Is there a tall building? A cell tower, any telecommunications tower, is not a special structure. It's just a way to hold antennas up in the air. A building or anything else will do just as good of a job. That was the first thing looked at. There's only one tower even in the area. It's further than the required radius that the city has, and it's at 4680 Main Street. So it's to the west of this facility in kind of a small business park right off of Main Street. Currently has three users. Because of that, the elevation offered for the antenna replacements would be too low. The other thing is, in discussions with the tower site owner, this tower has actually added structural capacity as well, which again, three users for a site is pretty standard for about what a structural capacity will have. So again, because of that placement, because of the low antenna elevation, and again, the tower is maxed out from a structural standpoint. Again, I'm sure you're very familiar with Main Street. There's not tall buildings. There aren't other tall water tanks, with the exception of the one. So because of that, it really requires then a vertical structure to be built, and in this instance, the faux tree tower. Go to the next slide. You will now see this in this location again. This is predictive with the exception of Mohawk and Thurston. This is reality. This is Springfield turned off. The dots there for reference, and then you see the coverage that will be afforded by the site we're talking about this evening, which is called Ridgecrest, right there on Main Street, again to the south, Clearwater, and then the location in between as well. So you can see the needed equipment to have that. As you can imagine, without this Ridgecrest location, there would be a large surface coverage gap in between the other existing Verizon Wireless sites, where the bypass comes in and intersects to Main Street. Again, this is something you saw, and in fact, I think I stole this out of the soft copy of the staff report that I was provided. Again, just a location as to where the site is in the back corner of the lumberyard. Next slide, please. Main components, again, and this was discussed, it's a 100-foot tall faux pine tree tower. It has added branches above that to about 107 feet, and that's to imitate a natural crown that occurs. It will be 12-pound-style antennas. Again, these will be screened behind the branches. There will be the associated ground equipment. I will again show the light layout. And then the structural design of the tower will be designed so that it can accommodate two additional users as well, with similar loading to what Verizon Wireless is proposing. I want to specify that one never knows what the future may hold. When I began in the industry, we were using omnidirectional antennas that were 24 feet long, basically looks like a giant rod antenna. There were three of them, that was it. Now there's panel antennas, there's different frequency bands. So again, guesstimating what someone may need a year or two from now is anybody's guess. But again, similar loading is being designed for that for three users. One of the other components, excuse me, I have taken a photo of this and it'll be put into the public record. This is a little beat up because it's been bouncing around in my trunk all day, but this is actually about a 4-foot branch from Urshman Engineering, the tower vendor that has been selected. So there will be these branches of varying densities, varying lengths that will actually comprise the tower structure itself. Again, people usually haven't seen these, or if they've driven by in the highway and as they go by. But again, wanted to bring that in for a visual aid. The engineering package and other things, it's a bunch of nuts and bolts and components that didn't really relay anything. And that's the reason I've got the drawings and other items. Next slide, please. design elements have been used. Again, we're not using a standard monopole design. Here is the other site that's just to the west on Main Street. We're not using a lattice style, traditional that you might see in broadcasting or the BPA towers. Again, it's a faux tree tower. The minimum height necessary is being done, especially in this instance, because these type of towers are about three times as expensive as a traditional one, so every 10 feet represents a lot of money. Trust me, it's as short as possible. Also, as I mentioned, the natural tree crown. One of the other things getting technical, it's going to be an L3 design. That means there's actually three of these branches per foot. That is the same density as the site down to the south as well. So again, that's why I said these sites are fairly similar from that standpoint. Also, the outdoor ground equipment is screened by landscaping, site obscuring fencing that will be placed, and then also existing buildings and distances to adjacent properties. Next slide, please. Just a view here down Main Street. Square Deal Lumber is down to the left behind the deciduous tree. You can see a bit of a square green sign. No, you're fine. That's what I was going to ask for next. Thank you. Again, the overall site plan, it shows where the facility is in the back corner, the separations to the adjacent properties as well. Again, the close-up site plan, I think this was actually straight out of the staff report as well, showing the equipment that will be on the ground. Again, this is bird's eye view, and then the faux tree tower as well. And then the landscaping plan. Landscaping is actually not required because of the surrounding zoning, the heights, et cetera. But rather than say, aha, we found a gap in your code, which it may or may not be, we're using site obscuring fencing on the north and on to the east as well. That's where there's open properties. To the south, you've got the lumber yard and the tall fencing and a great deal of separation from Main Street. To the west, there's a large lumber storage warehouse that provides screening as well. Also along this area, again, you can see that landscaping is going to be placed as well to help screen the equipment from the open schoolyard that's out to the north. To the area that's over on the east, the utilities and whatnot are going to be coming through there, and also the entirety of the area is paved as well, so difficult for landscaping in that section. Again, the visual impact mitigation really comes to three categories: the placement of the facility, again, the screening utilizing the existing vegetation and also added vegetation as well, and then the camouflage. All these items meet or exceed the code requirements. Again, the height was also discussed. There's a great deal of setback from adjacent properties. I think over 300 feet, if memory serves, in the staff report, the closest residential property, and even a little bit further than that, just because of the orientation of the homes on that. Again, the site obscuring fencing that's being utilized as well, and then also just the existing placement on the site to utilize the buildings and the separation from Main Street. These are two of the photo sims. There's actually three photo sims in your packet, but this is the view that most people are going to see as they fly by on Main Street, the existing view, and then, thank you, sir, the tower structure put back on that. And that's actually what you see is the vertical stacking of a number of these branches from 2 feet to, I think, some of the ones get up to 5 or 6 feet in length. Next slide, please. In conclusion, the facility design certainly meets the compatibility, and the mitigation is being done, again, because of placement, the screening, and the camouflage nature of the tower that's proposed as well, in line with the applicable code criterion, and certainly we concur with the staff report and the conditions of approval that have been requested. And the next slide says thank you. If there's any questions or whatnot, I know I flew through an awful lot of information, but you do have familiarity with the facility type that we're proposing in general, at least on the tower. The ground configuration is a little bit different on the equipment, but again, you've got a little bit of a base background as well as all this documentation in your head as well.
Question, yes, the trees that were shown on that one drawing, are those existing trees?
Yes.
And
yes.
Will there be a warranty that the landscaping is to stay in decent condition after the process is complete?
There typically is a rep and warranty, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this on these reduced drawings. I'm trying to see quickly if there is a rep and warranty. Typically, there's one that's put in by landscape architects for the first year to guarantee survivability, just because if you transplant 10 plants, one's not going to make it. Beyond that point, is there a long-term requirement either in the code or the landscape architect has? I'm not sure off the top of my head, and again, this font is so small, I apologize, I can't read that.
I was a little concerned because a couple of the trees were pretty good sized, and they're pretty close to where the foundation is going to be excavated.
Right.
Do you want me to add to that? Okay. Just
to add to that, through the site plan review, there will be a development agreement required, and so the design and intent of the landscaping is for a drought-tolerant native plants. So after an establishment period, it would be a non-irrigated situation, but the intent is to have it planted appropriately such that the plants will be able to survive with minimal to no ongoing maintenance. There are some, I guess I call them volunteer trees back there. Essentially, it's along the fence line, and there's a couple of trees that have essentially colonized the area. And so those are intended to remain, and they'll serve a screening and landscaping function in the future. So.
Commissioner James, do you have a question?
I do.
Staff for the
from the applicant, please. I know we went through quite a process as we discussed the other Verizon structure that was placed close to the relief nursery of 42nd Street. And it was my recollection, the branch spacing was one of the issues, and I think you addressed that, three per foot. But it was my recollection that particular tree was a redwood, and you're saying this is a Douglas fir. This one looks much more vertical than what I remember as being proposed for the other location. Can you speak to that at all?
I'm not intimately familiar with the other application. I have reviewed it. I'm aware of the site. I've been by as to the specific engineering. No.
But you stated this is the same manufacturer, and I think you referenced in your testimony that it was the same.
They're both mono pines, but I'm not familiar with that manufacturer. I was simply saying that is a faux tree tower. This is also a faux tree tower, as opposed to a lattice tower monopole, something along those lines. Again, I'm not familiar with the exact design, manufacturer, etc. Other than if memory serves in my review with staff, and please correct me if I'm wrong, the branch density from that application is what drove the initial staff conversation to mirror that at this location with the L3 style of branches.
Do you want me to add to the comments? Okay, sorry.
I'll just add clarifying points. The vendor or supplier for the one off of Mount Vernon, or sorry, of Jasper Road was Larson. And that is they had their own unique kind of branding and design to mimic evergreen trees. This is a different supplier, as I understand it, and so their appearance may differ. I guess it's in principle it's the same, but the actual execution might vary depending upon which manufacturer provides the facility.
Any other questions?
Oh, that's good.
Thank you.
Thank you, Richard.
Next, is there any testimony in support of the application? Hearing none. Any testimony opposed to the application? Hearing none. Any testimony neither in support nor opposed to the application? Hearing none, we will head on to a summary by the staff.
Thank you. In summary, staff agrees with the applicant's submittal. The recommended conditions of approval are contained in the staff report that you have before you. And the recommendation from staff is for approval of the discretionary use and conditional approval of the site plan. It does meet the requirements of the city's development code for a wireless telecommunication system facility, and therefore is approvable by the Planning Commission.
Thank you. Next would be rebuttal by the applicant, but I'm guessing we're good. Is there any request for a continuation of the public hearing, extension of the written record, or both? All right, hearing none, I will now close the public hearing.
Need a motion.
Mr. Chair, I would make the motion that we close the public hearing and the written record.
All right.
Second.
Everybody in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, we'll close the public hearing.
And the record.
And
the record.
The record. Now, it's an opportunity for the Planning Commission to discuss any possible the application and any more possible questions to the staff. Commissioner James?
Well, I just, you know, going through this process previously, I'm a little bit sensitive to, you know, the looks of that tree. It's right off of Main Street, you know, I know, I think that it's obvious to me that Verizon has done a great job identifying the coverage issues that they're faced with. You know, I'm just sensitive to the fact that there is a viewscape there, and that tree to me does not look as appealing as the other that we approved. However, I certainly know what's within our jurisdiction, and I know that they have met the requirements the code. And so the other issue that I really appreciate that was included was the information related to the radio frequency output. And, you know, there is a local, the school is 350 feet to the north of that location. It's 100-foot height. There is, you know, there's playground equipment there. There are children playing in that location. So from a public sensitivity standpoint, I appreciate that Verizon included the information related to the FCC and the radio frequency, and there were a couple of things there. I mean, I really perused that because that's one of the things that, you know, if I had a child going to that school, I would be interested in knowing as well. And to me, I think you certainly met the standards that have been set forth, so I appreciate the inclusion of that.
All right. I guess at this point we could entertain a motion. Commissioner James?
I would move to approve TYP 3150005 Verizon Wireless's discretionary use permit application for the installation of a wireless telecommunications system facility at 4919 Main Street. Map and tax lot number 17.02.33.32.4000 because the application meets the applicable criteria in the Springfield Development Code.
Seconds. Can we get a vote? With
who seconded?
Commissioner Dunn.
Thank you.
Yep. Can we do a vote with in favor by saying aye?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Now we have an opportunity for another motion.
I move to approve TYP 2150032 Verizon Wireless site plan application for Monopine Wireless Transmission System Facility at 4992 Main Street, map and tax lot number 17-02-33-32-4000, because the application meets the applicable criteria in the Springfield Development Code.
Second.
Thank you, Commissioner Bose, for seconding. Can we do a vote by saying aye, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And that motion passes too. this point, I believe I would entertain a motion to close the public record. All right. So the next thing on the agenda tonight is business from the Planning Commission.
Mr. Chair, while you may have other items to discuss, we have one scheduled for your consideration.
Yes.
It's appeared on your agenda.
Oh, the yes to the back.
And that would be an appointment to the Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee. Okay. There's also there's a presentation by Kim and Newman on this.
Thanks.
Thank you. So I'm here before you tonight to speak about the Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee. I'd like to give a brief overview as to what's been happening with the committee because it hasn't been before you in a little while, and also ask you to select a planning commissioner to be a liaison on the Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee. So at December 2014, so just over a year ago, the former staff person who was staffing the Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee as a primary staff person left the city of Springfield, and there was about a 7-month period in filling now my position as transportation planner with the city of Springfield. I have taken on the role of setting up the Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee to continue service, providing feedback to the city, both staff, the Planning Commission and City Council to give feedback on walking and biking in Springfield. As the committee was kind of getting up and going and gaining momentum again, the City Council expressed more interest in the activity of the Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee, BPAC. So through the fall and then at the October 5th, 2015 City Council meeting, the City Council decided to amend the bylaws of the BPAC to have the direct report of the committee go directly to the City Council. Formerly, it had been directly reporting to their body, the Planning Commission. So with that change in place, I think it's particularly important to highlight that the BPAC bylaws state that non-voting members may include one Planning Commissioner. I'm here before you tonight because Planning Commissioner Johnny Hirschman is no longer serving on the Planning Commission and therefore no longer serving in the liaison position on the BPAC. And we would like to have representation from the Planning Commission on the BPAC still. So the request is to take action and select a Planning Commission liaison to serve on the Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee.
Commissioner James?
Go ahead.
Question, how often does the BPAC meet, and any other information about what time of day and that?
Great question, thank you. So the BPAC typically meets every other month, February onward, on Tuesday evenings from 6 to 7:30 on the second Tuesday of the month. So it's an evening commitment.
It's a planning commission. It's a planning commission.
You know this. First and third is a planning commission.
That's right.
The second Tuesday.
Yeah.
And then we have a plan to pilot some subcommittees on the alternate month. So if the planning commissioner who is serving on the BPAC would like to be part of the subcommittees, they could do so, but that would be optional.
James.
Well, when the BPAC first formed, I was a representative on the BPAC for a time, and there are some really great engaged folks that are part of that process, and you know, I think it is critical that someone from the Planning Commission be represented there. It's a non-voting position, it's a liaison position, but it's good to have that interaction with those folks who are really driving the bicycle and pedestrian. They bring an excellent view to the table. So I think it's a great idea to have a representative on that group. We have a member that has requested to be appointed to be involved at a different level, Andrew Landon, and he's not here tonight, So I would nominate him to serve in the role as the liaison for the Planning Commission on the Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee, pending his acceptance of serving in that role. So the nomination's on the floor.
All right. I can second it. I'll second the fact that Andy should be given that opportunity. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. So.
Sure, he volunteered.
So, yeah, we'll have Andy reach out or vice versa.
He's another relatively new member to the Planning Commission. And he's very involved in bicycling and those types of things. So.
Great. I look forward to it. Thank you. And as the BPAC develops their work plan and figures out what's going on this next year, I'm sure that your liaison will help inform the rest of you as to what the committee is doing. And if you ever want to follow up with me, I'd be more than happy to talk. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Next on the agenda is any reports from the council. Anybody got any council meetings?
I think yesterday's was mine, but I missed it. So if someone else was there, I apologize for not making that one. The whole Tuesday threw me off.
All day. All right, not hearing anything from there. We'll move on to business from the Development and Public Works Director. Nothing? Very good.
I could, if you don't mind, I'd like to introduce Christina Krabs to the Planning Commission. This is our new associate here at our firm. This is Christina Crash. She's just started working with us. She's going to be training her on the Planning Commission, and then she'll be taking over these meetings soon. Christina will be working with DPW, Department of Public Works, a lot. She has an engineering background and is going to be doing a lot of our land use stuff. So we'll both be here for a while, and then she'll be on her own. And I'll be at those city council meetings. What would be the idea? So anyway, I just want to introduce you and let you know if you have any questions you can always ask.
Yes, could she tell us a little bit about herself?
I grew up in Springfield. I graduated from Thurston High School. My family has been here for a long time. Schmunk's Tire Center that's down on Main Street was my grandfather's business. So a little bit of that background too. And I went to Oregon State, got a degree in environmental engineering, and then I went to U of O Law School, where I did a lot of local government law and some environmental law as well. And I externed with Mary Bridget and with Lauren King when I was a law student.
Welcome.
It's great to have someone who was raised here and knows this community to have a career and be able to live and work here. So thank you for your support.
And also excellent that you've worked with the firm before, who's done an excellent job of representing City of Springfield's interests.
Thank you. Yeah, we know her, so yeah.
I do have a report on actually the November 9th City Council work session.
Yeah.
So folks would like to hear that. They discussed the Community Development Advisory Commission. They had three vacancies on that. They decided that they would reopen the vacancies. And I don't know if reopened them and had anything further on those. And then they actually began the discussion on marijuana regulations at the time. So I listened to what they had to say. So I had some background in what we're now discussing. So that was about it for the November 9th.
Thank you, Commissioner. All right, that would lead us to adjourning this regular session of the Springfield Planning Commission work sessions. So.
We're going to stay here.
We're just going to jump right into it?
Well, I think you have about 55 seconds if you want.
Do we want to take a break or do you want to jump in?
Do you want to sit and present?
I don't know.
No.
Thanks, sir.
Do they want to